Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Hey, Jim, can you hang on a minute? I have to set something up before we record today's episode, and I'm having a little trouble with it.
Yeah. What are you setting up?
I'm just reloading my vial of fake blood.
All right, Patrick, have you read any good books lately?
I got to tell you, Jim, I've been reading a lot of books, as I always do, and I've discovered some cool things lately. I've got a couple books too that I'm in the middle of, and in one case, almost finished with. But I will save those for another book nook. So, the two books I want to talk about today are not brand new books, but I think they're kind of hidden gems that people may have not read.
All right, so we will get to that in a second. I know people probably have a lot of or more book reading time on their hands. So,
yeah, definitely.
So this is good. So from time to time, we like to revisit your book nook,
yeah,
and talk about some latest rock biographies and whatnot that you have read. So
totally.
The show is called Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And we have music for this.
Welcome to the Book Nook. Look, we have books. And over there, another book. And right over there, it's a Kindle?
Okay, so that was the great jingle that you worked on with Mike Wagner, and it's
yes.
So fantastic. And
and amazing work.
Now we want to have jingles for like everything we do, every recurring segment. So Mike indicated to me today he's working on one for fan mail.
Oh, fantastic.
And he was going to sort of crowdsource the lyrics. So listeners,
okay,
who are on the Facebook and stuff like that, be on the lookout for Mike. Anything else that we do, if anybody, wants to write and record, a little song, a little thing.
Yeah.
I'd like to have music, in these little bits. It would be great.
It would be so great, especially coming from the community. Man, so thankful that Mike is our friend and part of our community.
Mike is great. Mike is absolutely great. But he doesn't need to be the only one either. If anybody, has ideas, we'll take it, So anyway.
Feel free to write a song about another member of the community even.
That's right.
That's fine too.
But Book Nook is set. We got that music. We've heard that. We've established that. That's really great. Okay. Now, what are the books we are going to discuss today?
Okay. So, two books, and then I want to discuss the author of the second book I'm going to speak about. But
okay.
I want to start with a book that was published December of 2018. The book is called Some Fantastic Place, My Life in and Out of Squeeze, and it's written by Chris Difford. And one of the big things I learned from this book, I knew that Difford and Glenn Tilbrook, being the other main person in Squeeze, songwriting partner, I always considered them kind of like a Lennon and McCartney type relationship, right? Where they were the two main writers. What I did not know before reading this book, in all honesty, was the fact that Difford wrote almost no music for Squeeze.
Oh, okay.
It was divided so starkly in most cases, especially on the early classic albums. Difford would deliver Tilbrook just poems or lyrics written out. Glenn Tilbrook would come back with a cassette with a demo with that music and the lyrics put on there with the melody and everything. And then obviously Chris Difford would sing and play guitar on these songs, and they would go into the studio and Tilbrook would kind of be the musical director, whereas Difford was the lyric writer. So that I found to be really, really fascinating. I didn't know that the division was so stark in that sense.
So that's more of an Elton John, Bernie Taupin type situation.
Yes, right. Exactly. And there's one anecdote I want to share about the book that makes that even more interesting, I think. But overall, the book is really, really interesting, really fascinating. Basically charts his life in South London all the way through up to present times, including squeezes, hiatuses, breakups, personnel changes, all the things he did outside of Squeeze in the music business. And there's quite a bit about his struggle with alcoholism and his eventual, well, we never say conquering, but his recovery from that disease and his continued practicing of the 12 steps and the way that's been a part of his life. So that part is very interesting too. And it's written in a style that's, you know, a lot like the Squeeze lyrics. It's very well observed. It's sharp. It's witty all over the place. I mean, there's a lot of really funny descriptions of stuff that you and I would say are like these monumental or cataclysmic events that he sort of, you know, casts in this dry kind of humorous way. And a lot of stuff about spending a lot of time in pubs and funny stories about the band starting out and how they got to where they were and some of the wrong turns that they took. So if you love Squeeze, especially the, you know, the first set of classic albums before they took that original hiatus, this is definitely a book to read. I mean, this is a man who wrote the immortal lyrics, legs up with a book and a drink. You've left my ring by the soap. Now is that love? You cleaned me out, you could say broke. Now is that love? The better, better, better it gets, the more these girls forget that that is love. You won't get dressed, you walk about. Now is that? Is that the teasing glances push me out? Now is that the tougher, tougher, tougher it gets, the more my lips frequent. Now that is love. Beat me up with your letters, your walk-out notes. Funny how you still find me right here at home. Legs up with a book and a drink. Now is that love that's making you think? So he obviously appreciates reading and that side of it, too. Here's a couple of things I found very interesting, and I didn't know. I won't give away all the juicy stuff in the book. But number one, later in his career, somehow Chris Difford came to manage Bryan Ferry. And at this point in his career, Bryan Ferry was very well known, very famous, and very, very wealthy from Roxy Music and from all his solo records. So that part is all really interesting. And he got into a little bit to management later in his career. The other funny thing, and I think I may have shared this with you, Jim, privately when we were talking, is that Chris Difford does go through a rehab. And he's going to leave this rehab center that really makes it take for him. And the guy who's running the center says, well, you can't leave without a sponsor. And Chris Difford says, well, you know, I don't really know who that could be. And he says, actually, wait a minute. There's a guy that came through here that also played music. I think he was a piano player. And he finds this phone number. He says, call this guy. He ends up giving him a call. And it turns out to be Elton John. So it's very interesting that you know, mentioned the Bernie Taupe and Elton John relationship. So Elton John becomes Chris Difford's sponsor, the guy that's going to keep him on the straight and narrow. And it turns out there's a lot of funny anecdotes, and it's great. I mean, you get to hear about Elton, and he gets to work with him musically. And gosh, there's a lot of great stories about the songs. And I'll share you one really quick. Pulling Muscles from the Shell, I'll quote here. Pulling Muscles from the Shell was inspired by going on holiday as a teenager with my next door neighbor, whose dad had an Austin A40. We drove down to a caravan park near Margate and saw the Small Faces play in the local social club while we were there. Lyrically, I tried to imagine how Ray Davies would write a song about this most English type of holiday, and the words came quickly and easily.
Behind the shadows.
much explains all their well-known songs and what the lyrics were about and how they came about. So, some fantastic place, My Life In and Out of Squeeze. Highly recommend it. It's only $4 if you have a Kindle, and you can get the paperback right now for about $12 too. So, definitely worth a purchase.
That's great. That's really great. A tremendous band. I mean, Squeeze, I think, is a underappreciated band for sure. And I think,
absolutely,
I don't know how much he gets into this, but it always seemed like their career could never quite take that next step up to the next level. Like they'd reach
especially
a
in
plateau
the US.
A lot. Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, yeah.
Yep, totally, totally.
And and I also think they were kind of a band out of time in some way.
Yeah.
You know, they felt like they never quite fit in any scene. I think we've even talked about this before. Like they,
totally.
Maybe that was part of the issue, especially in the U.S., where you know niches and genres and radio airplay was so important, you know, to fit into a certain, you know, style. Yeah.
Yep. Very well said. And also they were quintessentially English. I mean, a lot of the stuff they wrote about and sang about. Yeah, totally.
They did have one big hit song in the U.S.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, everybody knows Tempted, right? I mean, everybody knows that song.
Back when I was at the Bourbon and Beyond Festival out in Louisville, I was standing with our good friend Scott Boykin there, and we were watching Squeeze play, and every song we were looking at each other like, I love this one. Yeah, I love this one too.
I know.
And it just kept going on.
Maybe you only know the one hit, but then once somebody turns you on to their other songs, they just stick with you. You know what I mean?
Like
their songs are so well written, both lyrically and musically. And I think that is the key. And maybe that's why this partnership really worked, that you hear them a couple of times and they're with you for your life. You know what I mean? They're really.
It's totally amazing. And those early records are not just records padded with other stuff to go around the songs that were popular on college radio and were kind of well known. It's all really good stuff. So all that early stuff is fantastic.
Yeah.
Again, they made some cool, you know, some really good, interesting stuff later on. It's really quite an eye-opening book. I learned a lot about a band that I thought I knew pretty much about. And so that's always a really good sign. So.
All right. Very cool.
Check that one out. Yeah. Yep. Five stars. Now, for the second half of today's Book Nook, I want to talk about a guy I just discovered over the past month or so by looking to do research on a certain band that may be featured here in the next couple months or so on Rockin' the Suburbs. The author's name is Julian Gill, and I discovered by browsing here that he has written or collaborated on no less than 10 books, Jim, about the band Kiss, including titles such as The Definitive Examination of Music from the Elder, Kiss's classic cult concept album, Danger Zone, A Detailed Exploration of Kiss's Crazy Nights, 3 volumes on Kiss on Tour, which stretches from 1973 to 2016, and then 4 different albums that break the band's recorded career down into 4 sections, 72 to 82, 83 to 96, 97 to 2006, and 2006 to 2013, and he calls these the album focus books. So it is pretty amazing that he has put all this work together. I sort of think that he runs some sort of website on Kiss. I'm not really sure, but it's kind of an incredible body of work. He has written one. It came out in September of 2015 titled Gene, Ace, Peter, and Paul, A Detailed Exploration of the 1978 Kiss Solo Albums. Remember this, Jim, when the Kiss solo albums came out?
Yeah, the 4 that were released all at the same time back in the late 70s.
Yep, 1978. I mean, there. I don't think there ever has been a situation like this in popular rock music, right?
No.
When has there ever been a band who released, each made solo albums and each released them on the same day with thematic covers?
Yes.
And encouraged, you know, I mean, it's kind of a classic Kiss move, right?
Yes. It actually
turn it into a marketing gimmick.
Totally. It actually is kind of brilliant when you think about it.
And when you go back and read about it in this book, I mean, there's a lot of stuff about, I mean, how many copies they sold and what all the B-sides were and what the singles were and, you know, really sort of collector geeky stuff. But when you take the whole package into consideration, it's pretty amazing. And most of these albums got into the top 40 as well, which is kind of incredible.
I know. And it was brilliant because not only was it just so unique at the time and made such a splash and, like you said, was really marketed well. The covers looked great.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Just the whole idea of, like, you know, these four albums, right? And it was really a big, I remember it was a big deal. And then, but then also it had people talking about it because they wanted to compare the records and they wanted to, you know, whose was better or you know, why is Gene so not like Kiss and all that stuff, right? You know, it's
totally
like,
amazing.
It's so funny. And Ace, man, who knew, you know, it's just awesome. Right. Yeah.
Ace definitely made the best of the four solo records.
I had that record. I had it on cassette.
I mean, it's great. So a couple of facts I unearthed here. So if you're into Kiss and you like learning about details and all this stuff, there's a lot of really interesting information. So here's a couple nuggets I'll share with you guys. One, at the time, I guess the way the record industry worked and the charts worked was that you could not count return copies of albums, meaning albums that were shipped to retailers but never sold, and they sent them back for returns, which I guess there was a, you know, depending on the relationship, there's a certain period you had to wait.
Right.
All these albums, you know, the story was they all shipped gold or shipped platinum or whatever it was. But by the end of December 1979, there were 2 million copies of total of the four solo albums that had been returned to Casablanca Records. So even though they shipped a ton of copies, they didn't actually sell all that many as they actually said they were. The other thing I found really fascinating, there's an artist called Eraldo Caragatti, I believe is how you pronounce it, and he painted the four album covers, right? And they were all in different colors. There was like blue, green, I can't remember, red for Gene, and maybe purple for Paul.
They're really great. You know,
yeah, amazing. Yeah. He had only painted one album cover in his life before that, and that was Rush's Fly By Night.
Oh.
So you know that painting of like the eagle on Rush's Fly By Night album? That was the same guy who painted those, those Kiss album covers. And the last thing I'll share is that Gene had the most special guests on his album. He had 12 special guests, including Cher, Janis Ian, Joe Perry from Aerosmith, and Bob Seger. They all appeared on Gene's album.
Yes.
And all this happened in the same year that, or right around the same time that Kiss had Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park, a made-for-TV movie by a band that was shown on NBC television, and also debuted the first artist pinball machine, the Kiss pinball machine, came out right around the same time. And eventually 17,000 Kiss pinball machines were sold. And so they're out there somewhere in the world. I know there's one at Merriweather Post Pavilion that you can play.
Yep, I've seen it.
So that just thought it was really fascinating. I think it's definitely a book only for hardcore Kiss people. But if you're really, really into Kiss, and also if you want a lot of facts about their tours and their albums, this is, you know, you got to look up this guy, Julian Gill. And I'll tell you, many of his books are free if you're a member of Kindle Unlimited. So you can really get your Kiss on if you want to go and read these books. And there you have it. There may be more Kiss coming up in our future.
Maybe.
Possibly.
Okay.
But what do you think, Jim? I think you got to put it. Ace definitely had the best album. I think Gene's album was pretty good too. And then I think I would go Paul, and then Peter Criss's album is pretty terrible.
Honestly, I don't really know much about the others. I remember getting the Ace Frehley one because people said it was good, and I really liked it. And he really seemed to amp up the sort of like glam side, which I really liked.
Yep.
That was really cool.
And had New York Groove on there too, which
of course,
he did the definitive version.
It was great. I don't really know the others that well. I know that Gene, he kind of departed from the Kiss sound, didn't he?
He did.
Poppy or something. It was a little more.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think Paul Stanley's was just like bad Kiss songs, like pretty bad Kiss filler.
But it's such a weird thing when you think about it. I mean, I'm trying to think of like, is there another band that that, you know, we have liked, who could have done something like that. Like maybe maybe REM back in the day could have done, like four solo albums.
They might
like
be one of the ones that could have done it. Yeah, that's great. Who else could have done it? I know the Melvins put out an album or something with a Kiss, you know, with the covers just like the Kiss solo albums, but I can't remember if they were just Melvins albums. But again, no one's done it in an original style like that. A totally original act in rock music in 1978. And whoever thought it up, it's a pretty brilliant marketing idea.
Yeah, it really was. One quick correction, because I don't want to get letters on this, whatever. Fly By Night, that was an owl.
That was an owl. Okay,
yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes, which makes sense. It's at night.
Totally.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What did I say? An eagle?
You said
it was
an eagle.
Not an
That's
eagle.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Okay. Well, cool.
Yeah. So that's what
so
I got.
So you have a lot more Kiss reading to do is what you're saying.
I do. And I want to foreshadow a tiny bit. I'm reading a book, just almost finished with a book written by someone in the Go-Go's, and also reading Mark Lanegan's book. And so I'll make sure to talk about those next time.
Well, there's been some talk, if we can figure this out, about doing occasional like book club kind of thing where like you tell people
great.
What book it is you're going to read, and then we could have like a discussion. Listeners could also read the book.
That'd be great.
And then we could, you know, invite people on through Zoom or whatever and have a discussion and make an episode out of that. Talk
That'd
about
be outstanding.
Yeah.
That would require me to get my crap together, but I'll see what I can do.
All you got to do is say, all you'd have to do is we just have to put a thing
book?
On social media saying, I am now starting this book and we'll discuss it in 2 weeks or something like that.
That's,
or whatever.
I love that.
Might be, or 1 week, or well, give people a couple of weeks, I guess. Anyway. Okay.
Patrick's Book Nook Club.
Yeah, you'll get, there'll be, eventually it'll become such a big thing that publishers will come to you and say, how do
That's
I get into the book club? How do I,
I'll have a TV
the book
show.
Nook club? Yeah. Okay. And you get a book. And you get a book.
And you get a book.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Yeah, if they want to give us 10 free copies, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, there you go.
And I'll say really quickly, because we've done enough episodes of this podcast and our website is organized in such a great way by intern Sam, God bless his soul, that you can go to our website, suburbspod.com, and you can simply search for the Book Nook, or if you're listening to this current episode and you want to hear more like this, I mean, if you came for the books, just go to the website, click on Book Nook, the tag, or search the term, and you can get all the episodes lined up right there for you. That's a whole day's worth of listening.
Absolutely. Tomorrow, I think we're going to address some fan mail. So let's do that. All right?
All right.
Okay. If anybody out there has read these books or wants to talk about any other cool rock books you've read or make a recommendation for Patrick what he should read next, you can call and leave a message,
612-440-1984.
Right. Or you can email us rock@suburbspod.com or put a comment on our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. All of those are at suburbspod. All right.
And I will add, if you want to send us a book, you can send it to our physical address, which is 800 West Broad Street, box 6577, Falls Church, Virginia, 22040.
All right. Yes, that would be great too. Okay. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. When I'm traveling around and you fall behind.
By June 1979, Casablanca had shipped more than 5.3 million copies of the solo albums, including picture discs, which accounted for nearly 75,000 of that number. It was a massive number that far exceeded the shipments of Rock and Roll Over and Love Gun combined.